settle into the place that we're sitting and just connect with our breathing. Just feeling how we feel in our bodies right now, this morning. Not needing anything to be different. Whatever is there can be there. So just opening up to the feeling of our breath, the feeling of our body. And we'll listen to three sounds of the bell. Oh, good morning. And welcome again to our first full day of our retreat together. Retreat for people of color. And as it turns out, women of color. And allies, our friends who are Eileen, who's co-facilitating the retreat, as well as Vanna, Kate, helping out with cooking and many things. Lupita also. I just want to begin also by saying how personally how important it is for me to have a space like this to practice. Growing up in a mostly white setting, or certainly a setting in which there wasn't always so much skill in welcoming people with all that they were. And just many places in my life where there was a lot of division around race and a lot of discomfort and disharmony. And and I feel I'm still very much on a healing journey in my own practice, in terms of all the things that flow into me and what makes up my life. And I'm grateful to have experienced already a lot of transformation, but that this is still still an edge for me personally, and it's a deep aspiration for me also in my practice to help, you know, to do my part to help the Dharma serve more people and to help the Dharma speak more to the needs of our time in our, you know, our situation in North America, this moment in time, which is still very much caught in the suffering of racism and injustice and confusion. So to have a place to be with other women of color who want to bring the Dharma deeper and deeper into our lives, it's a big support for me. And so thank you for being here, because I think we all create, we co-create this experience for each other. So and if you hadn't decided to come, this wouldn't have manifested. So. So the theme of our retreat is taking refuge and building the beloved community. And the beloved community is what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about as his deep aspiration for the work he and many others were doing. And Thay, our teacher, speaks about it as Sangha building. That is the most noble task we can engage in, is to create community, create Sangha, create spaces of awakening for our own transformation and healing and for the benefit of many, many beings. So I feel like these are our two kind of important ancestors holding the space with us this weekend. And we'll bring in some women too. So I want to start by looking at this chant that we've been learning, the three refuges, which are taking refuge in the three jewels. And I'll just read it to you in its entirety. I take refuge in the Buddha, the one who shows me the way in this life. I take refuge in the Dharma, the way of understanding and love. I take refuge in the Sangha, the community that lives in harmony and awareness. Dwelling in the refuge of Buddha, I clearly see the path of light and beauty in the world. Dwelling in the refuge of Dharma, I learn to open many doors on the path of transformation. Dwelling in the refuge of Sangha, shining light that supports me, keeping my practice free of obstruction. Taking refuge in the Buddha in myself, I aspire to help all people recognize their own awakened nature, realizing the mind of love. Taking refuge in the Dharma in myself, I aspire to help all people fully master the ways of practice and walk together on the path of liberation. Taking refuge in the Sangha in myself, I aspire to help all people build fourfold communities. This is lay men, lay women, ordained women, ordained men, the fourfold communities, to embrace all beings and support their transformation. So in this chant, we take refuge in the three jewels three times. So it's nine taking refuges. In the first time, we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So these are elements that we turn to, that we go towards. And the second three, dwelling in the refuge of Buddha. So we're getting closer. We're in the house of the Buddha, in the house of the Dharma. We're abiding in them, we're becoming them, dwelling in the refuge of Dharma, of Sangha. For the first verse is, I take refuge in these jewels that have these aspects, the Buddha, the one who shows me the way. The second verse is already more active. So I'm dwelling in the refuge of Buddha, I clearly see the path of light and beauty in the world. So it's becoming part of us. How we look is now informed by where we stand, protected by these objects of refuge, these three jewels. Dwelling in the refuge of Dharma, I learn to open many doors on the path of transformation. Dwelling in the refuge of Sangha, shining light that supports me, keeping my practice free of obstruction. So it becomes a little more embodied. And then with the third set, we are taking refuge in the three jewels inside of us. So it's become like something we've eaten and digested, and now it's a part of ourselves. So taking refuge in the Buddha in myself, I aspire to help all people recognize their own awakened nature. So as soon as we go on the search for something, as soon as we look to this energy that is outside of us, and we allow it to become part of us, it takes us inward, and naturally that inward finding of a place of refuge in us, it takes us outward again. So because we can take refuge in the Buddha in us, we have a deep aspiration to manifest awakening beyond just our own personal life, our own experience. So it's really a journey. We look outside helps us find it inside, and touching it inside naturally makes us want to bring it outside again to help others. So we grow in our confidence, in our own ability to transform and grow. So, because each of the last three is taking refuge in this in myself, I aspire. And this aspiration includes in the last one, the wish to build community, to create refuge. So we have taken refuge, and then we become a place of refuge. We become part of creating refuge for others to awaken. So this is really the Bodhisattva path of committing to our own awakening, committing to supporting all beings to awaken. So let's look a little bit at the word refuge. Fun to explore. In the thesaurus, refuge means shelter, protection, safety, haven, a safe haven, security, asylum, sanctuary, retreat. Ta-da! A hiding place also. And if we need to take refuge, somehow we are also refugees. We need protection. And so a refugee is a fugitive, someone who's exiled, displaced, an asylum seeker, a boat person. And the root of refuge, the etymology, is from the Latin refugium. And re in Latin is back, fugere is to flee, and ium is a place. So refugium is a place to flee to, a place to go back to. So what are we fleeing from? What are we seeking asylum from? It's pretty powerful image. So I think we're all on a path if we're here. Spiritual path, because we are fleeing something. This may be our ignorance, our habit energies. We need to take refuge from. We want to take refuge to something, but we also need to take refuge from something. And The three defilements, the three major aspects of ourselves, greed or craving, hatred or anger, and ignorance or confusion. These are kind of what the Buddha spoke about as sort of the three things that really get us into trouble. So we need a place to go to be safe. And it's not really outside of those three defilements, those three core aspects of our suffering. It's in them. But we do need help to know how to hold them and how to look at them and see them clearly. I was reading a book called Wild White Goose about the life of an English woman, G.U. Kennett, who went to Japan and became a priest. This was, I think, in the 60s. So she writes about her experience being the only woman in the temple she was staying at in Japan, the only non-Japanese person. And it was pretty intense, because it was really not what they were ready for. But so she speaks about what motivated her in her spiritual path. So I'll just read some of what she says. She originally felt like her question was, you know, how to deal with, you know, the suffering and the distress in the world. She had lived through the Second World War in England, So she says, I could have left the Japanese temple at any time I wished, but I preferred to stay. The reason was simple. When I found out what my real question was, I knew I had no alternative but to go on with my training. For what had really brought me to the monastery was not why death and cruelty existed, but why I was as I was. Death and cruelty were in me just as much as they had been in Hitler's SS troops. And I knew that the real reason for my going to the East was because I wanted to do something about myself. And I knew that I was willing to put up with anything in order to change. However much other people disliked me, I disliked myself a lot more. I needed to change me. It was the realization of what my true question was. What caused the first arisings of selfishness? Why am I as I am? With my petty ideas, opinions, likes, dislikes, hates, and loves. Not why is the world as it is, and the need to have a heart at rest that made me put up with untold hardships and difficulties. Cruelty and death were in the world because of me and people like me. It was useless to try to change the world. I had got to change myself. And in so doing, the world would change also. Anyone who gives up Zen training is a person afraid of facing himself or herself. The need to face ourselves is the real reason that every one of us comes to religion or to spiritual practice. They who fail are not willing to accept that the answer to their question is not the answer they wanted. The above was the reason I went, but in changing myself, I found something more than the solving of my koan. Shakyamuni Buddha went out in search of the reasons for birth, old age, decay, and death. It was his acceptance of their inevitability as a sequence of events in time as we know it. After he saw his original face, after he was enlightened, that brought him freedom from their tyranny. It was the acceptance of the fact that the world is as it is because I and thousands of others like me have refused to do anything about ourselves. And my willingness to do something about me that brought me freedom and peace, along with the knowledge that I must never cease my training if I would improve myself. So that's a pretty powerful experience of why we go for refuge, of why this path is so important, because the world is the way it is right now, because most people aren't willing to look at themselves and to really, or they don't have the tools maybe. To know how to do that. To see clearly what's happening in the mind. And have the commitment to work with it, to be with it, to train constantly. Oh. So she experienced the same journey of these three refuges. She went looking for an answer, and the answer brought her back to inside. What she wanted to take refuge in, some answer, some explanation of why is the world the way it is? How can I live in this world the way it is? Took her to, well, how can I live with myself? How can I make friends with myself? Really honor myself and know myself. And so when the Buddha talked about taking refuge, he also spoke about it as very much an inner journey. When he was passing away, the very last things he shared with the practitioners around him were, you need to take refuge in the island of yourself and not in any other person or in any other thing. Not even in a teacher. So we all look for a home, for a safe place. That's part of why we start on a spiritual path. And it's inside of us. We can't depend on the outside. Because it's changing, it's impermanent. So in our tradition, the Plum Village tradition, we've had several retreats for people of color led by Thay starting in 2004. Again, 2005 and then 2007. After that, Blue Cliff Monastery in New York, Deer Park Monastery in California have continued to offer people of color retreats every year or every other year, led by the monks and nuns and lay practitioners in our tradition. But on the first people of color retreat in 2004, there were 400 people who came. Thay spoke about finding our true home. And he shared that it was only because he was exiled from Vietnam, when he lost his cultural national home, that he was able to find his true home inside. That those two, it meant very much together. I think it's an important teaching for all of us sometimes too, when we feel that we don't belong or that we encounter hostility or lack of understanding or some experience of being cut off from what nourishes us. Perhaps culturally or in our family, our background, to remember that, you know, that can we see this as an opportunity to touch a home inside of us that can never be taken away, that can't be destroyed. I I recently was on a 3-month silent retreat in the fall. And I went in to the retreat having gone through some months of being externally focused and wanting to find a home outside, wanting to believe that my refuge could come from outside. And in the process of just sitting and getting quieter and quieter, it just began to get clearer and clearer what an illusion that was, to think that, you know, something outside could bring me happiness and sort of save me. And the more I was just with myself, without taking in so much from outside, the more I got in touch with a deep source of happiness and peace that was inside of me, that wasn't caused by anything external. Just kind of like touching down into like a very deep well that was gave me a lot of confidence to realize, wow, just me being with myself. Of course, there were many people also practicing around me, but we weren't speaking. And so just, you know, hours and hours from waking up till sleeping, just having myself for company, I began to get a lot more intimate with myself and to just find natural expressions of joy, of humor. I could crack myself up pretty easily. But just, you know, the fog that had been there began to clear, and in its place was just a sweetness of just me being kind to myself, of me speaking gently to myself. It was, you know, it really is like we have lots of different voices inside, and I felt the voice of the mother, you know, sort of got was really clear that there was this voice, you know, at a meal, for example, there would be chocolate chip cookies. And so at that point I was, you know, trying not to eat sugar. And there was this little kid inside that said, "Oh, I really want a cookie." And the mom was like, "Okay, I hear you, you know. Just take one. You can take one." Like, kind. And you know, sometimes could also say no gently, or just pull my attention somewhere else. Or maybe I would just take the cookie and wrap it and forget about it. But somehow there was this knowing that, okay, just giving space to the different voices that were coming up in me. Or just, you know, what we sometimes call the inner coach, which is kind of say, well, maybe go for a walk. You've been sitting a while, maybe the mind is a bit heavy. There's some tension, or there's some repetitive thoughts that keep coming. Let's just go for a walk. And just be this kind of friendly, kind, like, non-judgmental voice that started to get stronger, that was affirming me in my wish to practice, in my wish to transform. Yeah, it was very reassuring to see this aspect get stronger, that I could provide for myself what I needed. And a song kept coming into my mind on this silent retreat. Well, lots of songs were coming into my mind, but this one was a helpful one. I'll play it for you. It's written by a sister, Sister Truvau. She's the abbess at Blue Cliff Monastery in New York. She's a wonderful musician. Beautiful, huh? It's kind of a a theme song at times in the retreat. Just reminding me, it's not outside. And this is when we talk about taking refuge in the Buddha in myself. It's this contentment, this freshness. Thay says the Buddha is your freshness. The wisdom that knows we need to stop and take care of ourselves, to put our practice, our well-being as first priority. Like this retreat, this is the Buddha in us that brought us here. It's this wisdom that knows how to nourish our joy, our gratitude, knows how to recognize when suffering is there that we need to be attentive to. So maybe just to allow this inner Buddha to have some air time, we can just get into pairs and share three things that we're grateful for. It can be anything. Just things you're grateful for in yourself, things you're grateful for in your surroundings, in your life right now. So you can just turn to somebody. Forgiveness that I have learned from my mother and father. This is what my soul is telling me. Be peaceful and love everyone. Dear sisters and brothers, we realize the importance of light when we see darkness. We realize the importance of our voice when we are silenced. In the same way, when we were in Swat, the north of Pakistan, we realized the importance of pens and books when we saw the guns. The wise saying, "The pen is mightier than the sword," was true. The extremists are afraid of books and pens. The power of education frightens them. They are afraid of women. The power of the voice of women frightens them. And that is why they killed 14 innocent medical students in the recent attack in Quetta. And that is why they killed many female teachers and polio workers in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Fatah. That is why they are blasting schools every day. Because they were and they are afraid of change, afraid of the equality that we are bringing into our society. I remember that there was a boy in our school who was asked by a journalist, "Why are the Taliban against education?" He answered very simply. By pointing to his book, he said, "A Talib doesn't know what is written inside this book." They think that God is a tiny little conservative being who would send girls to hell just because of going to school. The terrorists are misusing the name of Islam and Pashtun society for their own personal benefits. Pakistan is a peace-loving, democratic country. Pashtuns want education for their daughters and sons. And Islam is a religion of peace, humanity, and brotherhood. Islam says that it is not only each child's right to get education, rather it is their duty and responsibility. Honorable Secretary General, peace is necessary for education. In many parts of the world, especially Pakistan and Afghanistan, terrorism, wars, and conflicts stop children to go to their schools. We are really tired of these wars. Women and children are suffering in many parts of the world in many ways. In India, innocent and poor children are victims of child labor. Many schools have been destroyed in Nigeria. People in Afghanistan have been affected by the hurdles of extremism for decades. Young girls have to do domestic child labor and are forced to get married at early age. Poverty, ignorance, injustice, racism, and the deprivation of basic human rights are the main problems faced by both men and women. Dear fellows, today I am focusing on women's rights and girls' education because they are suffering the most. There was a time when women social activists asked men to stand up for their rights, but this time we would do it by ourselves. I'm not telling men to step away from speaking for women's rights. Rather, I am focusing on women to be independent, to fight for themselves. Dear sisters and brothers, now it's time to speak up. A little bit more.